What about your own background? What have you been involved in that's contributed to you doing what you do?
Well, I've been in ministry, church leadership for 38 years or so. I won't tell you what my actual age is. I'm older than I look. Through that process, I grew up in a big Chinese church, so already dealing with the whole cross-cultural issues there. And then I led the start of two new congregations within that church. I then led a church plant from that church. It's a church that was quite central because it's a Chinese church. It was a centralised church on Sydney Harbour, and it was on about, do you guys work in metres? 1,000 square metres of land, had 2,000 people on the church, and it had 6 services, of which 5 were in the morning. So you can imagine how squashy that was getting. So it was pretty obvious we needed to plant a church halfway between where most people were coming from and the church itself to try to catch people away. And then we did that for 3 years. We were invited to join another church that thought they were going to die, which was quite good timing because we were about to get kicked out of the church hall that we were using. So that became a repotting exercise. We were a mature church plan one, so it became a repotting exercise. So I guess that's given me a good insight into a lot of the issues that you guys face as church plans. It was an Asian church plant, even though the repot, we went to a Caucasian church. It was an independent, what do they call themselves? I think that probably would have been Methodist if the Uniting Church in Australia hadn't happened. So I think that's given me a lot of insight into ministry. Having said that, I've never been to Bible college. I've never been a paid minister. Why did I have to lead the starting of new congregations and church plants? The church we were at had a kind of, we rotate ministers around, but because we were the young people and we generally, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but we often would frown on the teaching that was being given by the Chinese pastors. And so we were often left to do things without a pastor, but God blessed the ministry. There were two particular ministries as I grew up that had massive impact on our church. One was a group called Campus Bible Study, which was at New South Wales University. You may have heard of Philip Jensen. We benefited greatly. Because as our people went into university, about 50% of them went through New South Wales, and then that was raising the bar for our kind of young people's ministry. And Katoomba Christian Conventions, which is like your Keswick, I think it was formed similar to your Keswick Conventions here. Having the benefit of flying great preachers in from, I think about half of them came from here. I remember people like Dick Lucas in particular, was very influential. So that kind of created the culture of this generation that I grew up in at this church. So how did I fall into leading, helping pastors with leadership? So I went to university and then I got a job, and in my job I got promoted into leadership positions very quickly. And one day one of my bosses said, where do you learn this stuff? And I never thought about it before, but as I reflected on it, I said, well, it's actually because I started learning at youth when I was 15 years old, and actually started leading the youth when I was 18 years old, and basically had to figure it out as well. I mean, there was a group of us, and we were helping each other figure it all out. Trying to apply the principles that we were learning in the Bible to how we should be treating and leading people and giving them vision and all sorts of stuff. And I was just taking those same tools, skills, learnings into the workplace and people seem to like what they said. So I had a 25-year corporate career. And for 10 of those years, I was actually recruited, not full-time, but to help Melbourne Business School to train the senior executives of corporate Australia. And again, I was like, well, I don't have an MBA. I didn't go to Harvard. But, you know, if you're going to pay me to tell people what I think, I'm happy to come and do that. So wrapping all that up, I think, you know, God's led me to think the work I'm doing with Reach Australia and helping pastors and being on the board and helping kind of shape the vision and direction and how we actually execute on some of those things.
So, I mean, that's what I wanted to say. No, not been a theological college, not been to business school, nevertheless, involved in developing leaders amongst churches and church plants. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you guys are concentrating on at the moment is, forgive me, I won't get the phrase right, sort of turning up the missional heat in congregations. We spent the term particularly with an evangelistic focus to try to raise the game of what we're doing and being more deliberate and intentional about it. Just give us a flavour of what that is, what you've learned, your observations from that.
Yeah. In Australia, I think we've slipped into a mindset of mission is somebody else's job. So about... years ago, I decided that, you know, the church repotting thing was going quite well. We'd found a new pastor for that. It was time for me to move on. We joined a largest church in Sydney. And mission was what I call checkbook mission. So every time a missionary would stand up and there'd be an appeal, there'd be plenty of money, but when there was an appeal for some help in other ways, couldn't be found. And that was 8 years ago, and I think that's pervasive across most of Sydney. Church planning was a thing, and so why do we need to reach our community? There's church plans here to do that. There's been no substitute for the big evangelistic meeting type events. They kind of petered out maybe 10 years ago. 2009, I think the Sydney Diocese tried a series of big events across Sydney, and most of the locations were barely 20% full. Mission heat was desperately needed. And then we get to the pastors of churches. What we found is that church planters in particular were so busy trying to get everything together. And you guys know as well as any the challenges of creating something from nothing. That is huge. That is a massive challenge that most Christians who sit in big churches don't understand. They think as long as you've got some money and you've got a location, why isn't it all happening? So I think part of it was helping church planters in particular in the Geneva days strip back to, okay, how do we actually help you identify the challenges? How do we provide some support networks in there, so that we do as much as we need to do to nullify the challenges of just getting church going every week and getting out into the community, so that you can actually focus on your core groups, the people that are there with you and sharing the vision for the mission you have in that place, and identifying what are the key things that you need to do to actually help the church grow a heart for that place. And what does that actually mean in practical terms? Does it mean hospitality, opening homes? Does it mean walking the streets? Does it mean getting alongside people? Because what we found with a lot of church plants in Geneva is people would go along, they would even leave their church to join a core group. But a lot of them saw their role as it was moral support. And my presence, the fact that I gave up going to my big church where everything happens, and I've come and I'll set up the chairs every Sunday, yep, and I'll turn up 15 minutes early to do welcome in. I'll clean the toilets. But when it actually comes to engaging with people that I don't know, especially if I'm in an environment I'm not familiar with, well, that's what the church plan is here to do. So I'll do all the stuff that takes the pressure off him. So there was, as far as the congregation members were concerned, there wasn't a lot of mission feet. Church plan just sound like a very kind of trendy, if I put it that way, trendy thing to do, particularly if I wasn't getting on with the pastor of the church that I was in. What we tried to do is help pastors themselves build the mission heat. Because if you guys wake up every morning and the great burden in your heart is for the lost in your communities, that will drive your day. That will help you decide what's important and what is not. And so when the first 15 emails come in and the first 12 of them are people complaining about church on Sunday, you have a greater capacity to see through those things, understand that you now know where those people are at. You don't have to take on their baggage. But understanding where they're at and then what's the ministry that they need in order to, over time, be able to come closer to joining you in your vision for your church plans around taking the gospel to the people that otherwise would struggle to hear it from anybody else. So I think we were well on the way with church planters in helping, and church planters, I guess, get it because that's part of, you know, it's largely the reason why they decided to become church planters. The bigger challenge now is with the established churches. Sydney's very affluent, as you guys know. Every town that we've been to on our holiday so far, everyone, I mean, we even met one couple on a walking tour who wanted to have dinner with us afterwards because they've been researching Sydney for 2 years because they believe they've never been to Sydney. But it's a great place to live. They said that they can earn 3 times more money and the housing prices are only 2 times more expensive, so they're better off. Climate's better, blah, 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 blah. So people in Sydney, I think, just...
There are things that can kill you in Australia, though. You don't have money.
Well, that's true. That's true. But in Sydney, you generally don't come across those that often, except crazy drivers, particularly if you ride a bike. In Sydney, yeah, so people ride bikes as general mode of transport, and it's simpler. Cyclists can do anything here and they get forgiven. But in Sydney, if a cyclist is 1 millimetre in the wrong spot, you've got 15 people shouting and screaming at you as they drive. But apart from that, so mission heat is really, and I still feel that we haven't quite got it right. I'm a true believer in, it's great to encourage people, you know, God is love and people are missing out and so they need to hear the gospel so they can experience the great joy that we have as Christians. Yeah, that's great. But God is also righteous and holy and just. Judgment is coming. And I think in Sydney we've been very reluctant to be reminding people about that. It's almost the same as talking to people about money. Like, Michael, that, why would I do that? I'm kind of scaring people. Well, you can do it in a way that's not making people feel guilty. You teach the Bible the way that the Bible teaches it and we'll get it right. But sin is one of those things where it is about having a good life and everything being nice, and so to hear bad things. I think pastors kind of recall from that. I remember one pastor, I was in his church for that week, heard the sermon, and I said to him the next day, you could have got a lot harder on putting it on the hearts of your congregation. What they need to do, I can't remember the passage, but there's a real passage. And what saddened me was he said, well, Michael, what you need to understand is that I have to get up next week and preach to them again. And I said, well, help me understand what the problem with that is. He goes, well, if I offend them, then they're not going to listen to me next week. And I said, well, number one, if you tried, And number two, my bet is if you actually put something on their heart and God uses that, they will come back next week with their ears burning for more. And by the way, why has God put you here? If God's only put you here to tell me what you think I want to hear, I understand why your church isn't growing. But it's actually going backwards. So what are we doing? Just let me know if I'm getting...
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that question yourself. I think my question is, okay, I can see that the wisdom, the value of adding mission heat, fundamentally going with the leader. So the burning desire when you get up in the morning and everything shakes, throws out of that. What does that mean? What is that? How do you do that? How would you, for each one of us, turn the mission heat in our lives? What kind of things have you done and that have worked?
Yeah, I think, well, number one, no surprise, but being deep in God's word yourselves every day. And whilst that sounds obvious and to some people a bit pedestrian, the number of pastors that I meet who struggle to open their Bible every day just staggered me and still does. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to continue to remind yourself why God has put you where he's put you. He hasn't put you where he's put you to organise chairs in the hall every Sunday. He hasn't put you where he put just so that you can run around organising lots of stuff and do your program. And he's put you where he's put you because he wants you to give him glory in everything that you do. And part of giving him glory is how do you do your part in bringing more people into the kingdom? What does that look like for you? So I do a lot of work with pastors around what is, you have a vision and a mission for your church, but what is it for your life? Why has God chosen you for this particular place? It's got to be a reason for that. I think there's a unique reason why God has put me in the ministry positions that it's put me at Reach Australia, for example. I have a very unique background. But all of you have unique backgrounds. And I met a lot of church planners where I know that I couldn't be planning a church in that particular area. But if you understand what God's mission is for you, and I talk to, and the next step around that is really, so how do you keep on track with that mission? Because I understand as pastors, there are so many things that distract you, right? There are pastoral issues in the congregation. There are people who are having disputes with each other. You know, there's someone who's always continually resenting the fact that he doesn't like the way that you put the chairs out and stuff, whatever it is. Right? And those things Satan uses to drag you away from the main game. And so what can you, I talked to pastors about systems. So you need to have a system that you work to that helps you deal with all those things that Satan will otherwise use to become bigger elephants than they really are, take and absorb all your time. So you can stay focused on what it is that you are doing. And the simpler you can make that while you're here, the easier it is for you to stay focused on that. Now, having said that, it does sometimes create its own issues because people go, well, you're too focused on that, but what about that? And you just need to be open to the fact that there are some trusted people around who can tell you where sometimes maybe you're going too far or too hard down a certain path and you're leaving your people behind. And that's part of the leadership team.
Just let me push into that concept of the particular clarity of why God has put a particular leader in a particular situation. I'm just trying to think what that might have thought about. So, how does that get fleshed out? In one sense, I ended up in Ballon because Richard Cokin asked me to plant a church out of Ballon, out of Dundonald back in 2002. Why was it Ballon? Well, that's where some people came from, seen good a place as any. Right, what am I doing? Well, I'm doing Christian ministry. That's what I'm doing. So how is what you're proposing tweaking and changing that? Perhaps bringing out the focus and intentionality. Give me a flavour of the kind of things that you have in that conversation with someone when they're about their particular mission.
And so I guess I challenge people around, so we know in God's sovereignty that whilst it may not be obviously apparent, but God was working in the fact that Richard asked, tapped you on the shoulder to go to that place. So part of it would be, well, what did Richard see in me in particular? Why didn't he tap somebody else who might have all been in a similar stage of readiness as me? So that's part of it. But in God's sovereignty, I'm pretty sure most people share this, but in God's sovereignty, both for your own benefit as well as for the benefit of the gospel in that place, he felt that it was good for you to go there. And so what does that actually look like? So you come as a person with a particular experience, a particular skill set, a particular background, and a particular heart for the gospel. How does that apply to the people in that place? And for the time that God has you there, whether you think you're the right person for that or not is not the relevant question. The relevant question is God has put you there. So for today, because it's not going to presumably remove you before the end of the day, what you need to get up this morning and do in this place that's going to have maximum gospel value. And what that looks like for you would probably be different in the specifics to what it looks like for me. Does that?
Yeah, that's helpful. Let me throw it open. Comments, queries, questions from any of you guys?
Yeah, just the water would be great. Thanks.
How do you deliver this? Is it coaching? Is it workshops? Is it mentoring? How do you encourage? How do you engage with and work with pastors?
Yeah, so we do it at a range of levels. So we've started running a conference every year, a registrar conference. So we challenge them in a big group sense around that, but we try to do it, think as individuals, but we're in a big group. We have a development program, and there's 3 weeks of residential training. And so that's where we go very deep, and every group is maximum 16 people. And as we talk about this sort of thing, the table's been set up like this, and I'll be walking around and I'll be looking at each of you as I was asking the question. We'd have a series of things for you to then record your reflections. We'll give you time to go away and think about that. And then during meal times, quite often people come up and they'll chat around specifics, what do I think about this and how do I feel about that. We've even had pastors where, and this may resonate with some of you, where their wives haven't been as clear about the vision and the mission of what they're trying to do, and that in itself has created a blockage to the ministry. But again, none of these things happen, I believe, by accident. They're all things there to, number one, help that church planter grow in how to be a leader and how to be a husband, how to be a father, and how to do it, and how to be a church planter in that context, that in his familial context. So that would affect how the mission that he believes God has for him in that place. And it may be that he doesn't grow the church from 45 people to 500. Maybe he's there to do the hard work of 45 to 80, and that might take 4 years, but there might be a massive growth with his wife in the group. So all these scenarios come up, and then there's the coaching one-on-one, and generally part of the coaching, we go through this with every single person as part of the coaching curriculum, for want of a better term.
Yeah. We've not talked about coaching with you guys, have we, really? So all our current church planters are meant to have coaches. It's one of the big achievements of lockdown. I think it's a game changer. We should talk about it in here at some point. It's an absolute game changer. Think of it as bespoke leadership development, where you bring your issues and get to talk through them and address them, overcome. So I'd love to press into the I'm so tempted to ask you more about leadership development, but I won't. Just on evangelism, your observation from the Sydney scene. What are the churches that are growing evangelistic? What are your observations about that? Is it what they're doing, how they're doing it? We want to cut the pace.
Yeah. Maybe just the church that I'm going to, that I moved to 8 years ago, I might talk about them. Well, I'll just check, because it's a large-ish church. Will that still be helpful?
Yeah.
Because I think the mechanisms would still be the same. So,
is it denominationally aligned?
Yeah, so it's Christ Church St Ives, which is an Anglican diocese church. So it's one of the larger churches in Sydney, and it sits in what people probably used to call the Bible Belt of Sydney. I don't think a Bible Belt in Sydney exists anymore. It's 60% of people in Sydney now, according to the latest census, claim to have no religion. So as you know, 8 years ago, I gave you the mission example, checkbook mission work. Evangelism was, okay, so tell us when the talks are, and if we get around to it, we'll invite some people. Very few people ever did. So those things petered out. So I challenged the previous rector. I said, look, we'll move permanent to this church if we see you've got a vision for changing all of that. And he goes, well, Michael, I do. The problem is that I don't know how. And I said, well, if you're happy to work together, let's try and do this. So this is how it used to look. We'd have mission on the calendar in terms of evangelism for our friends and neighbours and little family, et cetera. But that would be run as a separate series of events to everything else that happened in the church. So our small group ministries would just happily go on and do whatever they were doing. Church Sundays would happily go on doing what they, apart from the fact that there was an announcement every 4 weeks that there's this event coming up, you know, invite your friends. The first step was we recruited a guy who loved evangelism. And so I sat down with him and said, okay, well, help me understand how you're going to do this in a big church without killing yourself. Because I wanted to hear what he had to say. And it was news to me. He said, Michael, if you're expecting me to do all the evangelism, you've got the wrong guy. My job is to mobilize the people. And I said, great. So we're going to work together. But even then, he still struggled. He would get up and he would say that. We would just fall on checkbook evangelism ears, right? Yeah, so how many more people do you need? Do you need a bigger hall? We'll underwrite the cost of whatever. So what did we end up doing? We got a group of people together who had a heart for evangelism, and they were across all the different congregations. The very first year, we our target was just to get people seriously thinking about the people that they should have a heart for, that will be lost if they don't hear the gospel. And we just ran some really basic things in church. Part of what I try to help the rector and his team understand is, if we want mission to have the right place in the heart of everyone in the congregation, then it needs to have the right place in church. So if we're now running, if it's now the part of the year where it's the mission evangelism program, then should not the preaching revolve around that, get people ready for that? Should not what we do in church help bring people to the right point? Should not what we do in our small groups be supporting all of that work? And so that wherever I go, whether I'm coming to church on Sunday, I go to my small group on Tuesday, or I'm chatting with a mate in the coffee shop in the city Thursday for lunch. All our conversations all around what we're doing at church is all focused around mission. That's all interrelated. Because before we started doing that, I just said to the guys, look, as a member of the congregation, which is another uniqueness I bring, because everyone that I work with in ministry is a paid ministry worker. So I thought, well, I'm a member of the congregation, so let me tell you how we feel, because we're the ones you're trying to influence. Every Sunday, I just feel like I'm pulled in five different directions. And so I don't know which one's more important, so I end up doing nothing. And then you wonder why no one does anything. just to give an example, to be serious, if you give time on Sunday to something, it must be serious, because everyone's there, and if it's not important, you're wasting everybody's time. We felt that we needed to spend at least 10 minutes in the service, not making an announcement, but actually in the service, facilitating a session where people would, the first step sounds crazy. So this is a church that has 350 people in this particular congregation I'm giving you an example of. We called this 10-minute segment Welcome to the Neighbourhood. The reason we did that was the very first thing we were worried about was if this all works and people do introduce their friends, we want them to come into a welcoming church. But how can you come into a welcoming church when the people who sit next to each other don't even know each other? And yet they sit in the same seat every week. And every week there's a turn around and say hi to the person next to you, and they just say hi to the same person. So we had this Welcome to the Neighbourhood. We said we needed to do this over a 6-week period. The first week or two was just getting to know the people around you. The third week became, start thinking about your network of non-Christians. There's got to be people that you live in the same street with. There's got to be people in your family. There's got to be people you go to work with, people you meet at school, drop off, whatever. And we actually said, so the people that you've just got to know, that you've seen their face for 10 years, but you just haven't really got to know them, share with each other about these people you're thinking about. And right now, in church, pray for each other. So it's not an announcement. We're just getting them to do it. And then we said, by the way, we're going to come back in 2 weeks and do this again. And we're going to ask you to speak to the same person you just prayed with and say, so how did you go with the people that I just prayed for you for 2 weeks ago and I've been praying every day since? And in reverse. So we introduced accountability into that. But in the background, in the growth group, in the small groups, we beefed up all the leaders with little training tips on, you know, people who are getting scared about, well, how do I ask this person? So we created a series of videos with people just doing different ways of approaching people. So that all just helped bring all the barriers down. So the first year, we probably got three times more people than we ordinarily would to something. But it's quite amazing. Two things, one good point, one bad point. The bad point, the frustrating thing was, it took me about 20 hours of negotiation over 6 weeks to get that 10 minutes in church.
20 hours?
Those segments.
Good grief.
Yeah, because the guy who ran church wasn't the mission guy.
Yeah.
Right? And so the mission guy goes, well, I don't have the authority to put it in the church program. But the guy who's running the church program said, well, it's already full. So we got through that. I won't go into the detail. But the very first week we did it, at the end of church, and this is just me, but at least half a dozen people came up to me after church and said, that was amazing. Now, I've sat next to that person for 10 years and no one's ever asked me to actually engage with him.
Do Aussies not do small talk?
If it's around sport, yes.
Okay.
If it's around children, yes.
Yeah.
Anything else? No.
Yeah.
But the other thing we learned from the first year of doing this was a lot of people started feeding back into small groups. Well, Michael was coming to me from this point. Like some of the people are saying, how do I invite someone to church when they don't even know I'm a Christian? And what horrified me was when I said, well, you know, how long have these people been at this place? We've got some of them in 10, 15, 20 years. Like, how can you work in a place and people not know you're a Christian? So there was shame involved in admitting that they were a Christian, and I don't know, you know, maybe they were ashamed if someone found out. And so right off the back of that very first year, we started working with the whole prospect of, you know, the rector was great and said, we need to help people understand that they're Christians everywhere and we're supposed to be a lamp on the hill, not hidden under the bed. And so the second year, people started feeling freer and freer. And so I think the gospel heat was built by, firstly, in the those little tendencies of church, actually getting people to think about people that they know and they love who are going to go to hell, and how would you feel about it? You know, who's going to, if you don't tell them, who do you expect to tell them? You know, we have a thing called the National Church Life Survey in Australia as well. And last year, they piggybacked off the back of the census, and they had a stat which said that the majority of Australians don't know a Christian in their everyday circle. That staggered me. I mean, I knew that Christianity was in decline in Australia, but I didn't realise that it got to a point where, and as I reflected with a few mates around that, we don't think that it's because there's that few Christians. We think that it's Christians who are not willing to light their lamp. And so that was a big challenge we had in helping. How do we help the pastors see that in their people? And then how do we help them move the people to the point where they're able to light their lamp in a way that's going to be helpful and constructive and grow them. So that campaign's now been going for in my church. I think we're now into the fourth year of it. And by all accounts it's going strong.
I'm conscious of about to have lunch, but any questions from the floor? Otherwise I'll pray. Michael's gonna stay for lunch, yeah? Great, so available for further conversation. But, any burning questions from the floor?
Just how did you, like, for new Christians or non-Christians in church, maybe especially non-Christians in church, how was that not, how did you make that not awkward?
Two ways. So initially, the first 2 weeks was really just get to know the people around you. That helped the people who were new Christians or not Christian. And the guy who led this from the front is a very, can't think of the right word now, but he's just able to put things in ways that everyone appreciates. So I can't think exactly what he said now, but he did address that specifically so that those people did not feel uncomfortable. But the fact that they're in church and that they're, if you're in church, you're here for a reason. You may have some friends that may think similarly. Maybe you want to let them know and that you're just checking it out as well, and they might want to join your kind of approach. Yeah. But also, I think everything that he was saying was kind of had a second ear to, and if you're not a Christian, hopefully what we're talking about is actually helping you along the way. Yeah, that this is an important thing, and that it is about eternal life and death. Yeah.